So this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, produced by Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams. This is Ben Wink, economics reporter, economy reporter at Business Insider. Thanks for joining us again, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. It was great to be here.
Yeah, likewise. We're glad you could join us. It's Thursday. Let's talk about the U.S. weekly jobless claims. Where are we today?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we've now had three straight weeks of increases. The initial claim from this morning was 362,000 people filing for unemployment benefits. So that's not just, you know, above the pandemic lows that we saw a few weeks back, but ever since the federal government's boost to unemployment benefits expired on September 6th, we've seen claims rise every week since. So now, I don't know if there is a direct connection there. To say that would be, it's a bit early to say that. And this data is volatile, right? We get weekly readings and it can jump around quite a bit. But, we're starting to see a trend back to higher levels. And keep in mind that claims are already way above the levels we saw before the pandemic. That, you know, before the COVID crisis, we were seeing about 200,000. Now we're climbing kind of close to or above 350,000 and closer to 400,000 a week.
Well, you would think that those numbers have to shrink because jobs are available. There's less government support. People are going to go back to work. There will be fewer jobless claims, right?
So, yeah, for sure. On one end, that's definitely playing a role. There are so many jobs that need to be filled, and you can only go jobless for so long, especially, you know, in the middle of this health crisis we're still going through. You know, case counts have been going down in the past few days, but we're still in a pretty nasty wave with this Delta variant. But on the other hand, I've talked to economists who are saying, that Delta virus and the fact that it is more contagious, that could be leading people to delay their return to work until we get back down to the case levels that we were seeing in the summer. And there's also the fact that, maybe the government boost to unemployment benefits and the fact that we are talking about the unemployment insurance program more, that might have led more people who wouldn't have applied to be a part of it. And so there is this sort of fringe idea that maybe unemployment benefits filings are going to be elevated permanently just because more people know that the program exists.
Well, that's a roll of the dice for those folks, because I don't think that's where the pendulum of public sentiment generally is on that issue. But if they aren't feeling the pinch enough yet, and they're not getting greedy enough, like, do you want to go Christmas shopping? I guess folks are going to live the way they're living. Although you do have to believe there are extraordinary circumstances, like fear of the virus or inability to work because there's still not sufficient child care. That's got to be a big part of it, don't you suppose?
Of course, child care is a major factor. And we are, yes, the school year has started, but there is still some awkwardness, right, with, of course, the Delta variant, child care expenses still being very high, and just some people trying to figure out, hey, maybe I want to find a job in a different sector. There is a bit of a mismatch between where the jobs are and where are the skills of all the people who are unemployed. This has been described as a bit of a speed bump, and it could delay some of that matching between unemployed Americans and jobs. So we're going to see how that progresses, obviously, but I think with case counts now starting to fall back to more comfortable levels, hopefully we can start to see the economy, the economic recovery pick back up.
Give me a short answer to this, Ben, then I'll let you go. But what are you thinking about this debt ceiling? What's going to happen here?
It's nasty because Republicans are holding their ground. They're saying that Democrats are going to have to go it alone, and Democrats are saying they don't want to go it alone. They want to get Republican support. I think Democrats are going to have to do this on their own with a reconciliation bill. I just don't see another path forward, and nobody wants to see the U.S. default. I mean, that would really be catastrophic.
That's the can, and we keep doing to it. It's nice to talk to you, Ben. Thanks for joining us today.
Likewise.
Ian Schur is here, editor-at-large at CNET.com. Hi, Ian. Welcome back.
How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Somebody sent me a note, and they said, hey, if YouTube's going to ban vaccine information that's not true, who's going to be the decider? Some of it's blatantly bogus, but sometimes it's gray. What's your thought about that?
I think that this is one of the big battles that's about to happen on the internet. And part of the reason that Google, I think, who owns YouTube, has been really not wanting to fight this is that, you know, amidst the pandemic, it seemed as though once the FDA approved the vaccines, this debate would kind of calm down. And what has instead happened is it's become extremely political. All of the survey data and all of, you know, a lot of the correlating data you can find shows that this is becoming a very political issue. If you're on one camp, you're very much more likely to be vaccine hesitant or against the vaccines, and the other you're not. And as a result, it's become even more problematic for Google because that means they're now wading into banning political speech, and they certainly don't want to do that. So it's gotten to a point where it's come to a head, right? This is a public health crisis, and there are literally people dying because we are finding from survey data that when there are people who are vaccine hesitant or don't want to get a vaccine, they say that they're getting their information from YouTube or from social media. They're not getting it from doctors and the, you know, public health agencies. And that's a huge problem.
But they're also getting it from doctors online who are saying some of those things. I mean, you know well as I do that I'll get email from people or text messages saying, well, what about this doctor whose video is on this site from Indiana? How about that guy? So
yeah, no, look,
you got to keep score.
Part of the problem as well is the way that social media works. You know, there's this computer program for all of the websites, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, that decides what you see on your homepage, right? It's called the news feed or the algorithm or whatever you want to call it. And that is what separates this all from being just a debate to them actually supporting this stuff. When a person is outlandish or they are inflammatory, these algorithms, these computer programs, tend to give what they are saying more attention.
Yeah.
And that is part of where a lot of this problem is. You know, if we were in an equal situation here, right? Everyone was in a room and they were all shouting and they all had a voice. The public health officials would likely get a lot more attention because, first off, the people supporting the vaccines, there are many more of them, and also it would be a lot harder for the few people who are against them to really get attention. But because of the way the internet works, the minority who are against them get the most attention, and that is part of the problem that continues to keep happening over and over and over again.
I'll leave this be for now, but I wonder how that would happen. For instance, if I posted a video and it was deemed to be inaccurate, would that post somehow come down? It would be coded and they'd know and it would disappear?
You know, I honestly don't know how they're going to play this out. Historically, what they've done is that they err toward the most egregious, right? So if you are on the line, they'll likely leave it alone. But if you are, you know, hugely egregious, right, you're saying it'll turn you into a Muppet, then they'll take it off.
Which one of the Muppets, by the way?
So that is part of the issue, right? I mean, I wouldn't mind being Grover.
TikTok says 1 billion people use its app every month, and that's not even in first place, is it?
No, I mean, look, Facebook is the largest, right? They've got about 3 billion people using, 3.5, which is, you know, roughly about half of the world's population, give or take. So 1 billion is, you know, may not seem like a lot, but in fact, it makes it one of the largest social media apps on the planet. And we all kind of knew that. If you're paying attention, right, you're hearing about it all the time. I certainly talk about it a lot these days. And if you have a young person in your life, you can't stop hearing about it. And that's part of what's interesting is that this is a non-United States company, right? Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, they're all based in the U.S. But also that this is an app that's very different from the way Instagram and Facebook work. You know, this is an app based on short-form videos that are meant to entertain you or to, you know, these dancing video competitions and stuff. And that's very different from the magazine-y stuff of Instagram that we're now debating or even the, you know, information-heavy stuff from Twitter. So it's very interesting to see this get so large.
Oh, yeah, I won't vandalize a bathroom until I go to TikTok first. That's my go-to source to get all of the details on how to do it and where to post it.
That's right, and you especially need to make sure that you get it on the For You page. That's their homepage.
I don't even know what you just said.
That's all right. The teenagers are really impressed I said it.
Target's going to kick off holiday shopping early this year. Wow, like October 10th?
Yeah, it just keeps happening earlier and earlier. And look, part of it is last year Amazon had their Prime Day in October, And Prime Day, of course, is this fake shopping holiday that we all used to make fun of and now is a real thing. And, it, you know, it used to be in the summer, and then the pandemic happened last year. They pushed it to October. This year they did it in the summer again, but it turns out that starting holiday shopping in October is not that bad an idea, and it turned into a pretty successful thing. So Target has decided instead to pick up the baton and do it. And in fact, they're making it very clear that this is holiday shopping. They say that their holiday price match guarantee, right, which is where they will, they're willing to go all the way to December 24th, starting October 10th. So this is it. The holiday shopping season starts October 10th.
One last thing. Can you just give me the headline on Amazon mapping out your future?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is really about robots and the idea of all of these things becoming very normal in our lives. You know, there's so many devices that Amazon wants to get into our lives that have cameras and microphones and are learning about the life, the world inside our homes that we're not really used to doing, but it seems like Amazon sees this as part of the future. So we have a really great story on CNET kind of walking through a lot of that.
Ian Schur, writing at CNET.com. Ian, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Take care.
WGN Radio is shining its big light on Evanston. That's your hometown today. So we're telling you about that place and some of the businesses and people there. It's sponsored by At Properties, Grainberry, McDonald's, and the Village of Evanston. By the way, the folks at McDonald's dropped off those glazed pull-apart donuts. If you're going to have donuts with your coffee, it's decided. These are really good. They're so easy to pull apart. They're delicious, and I'm going to stop talking about them now. Actually, I'm going to talk now about a different Evanston business. Paul Haletko is here. He's the owner and distiller at Few Spirits, FEWSpirits.com. Paul, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on today.
You guys make bourbon and rye.
Yep.
What else? Gin I've had. Do you do a vodka as well?
We don't do vodka. Vodka is a very difficult business, but we're really proud of our bourbon and our rye, which are our flagship products. And now sold, just in the last 10 years, we've grown distribution from Chicagoland all the way to all 50 states and about 36 countries.
Few Spirits is worldwide.
Few Spirits is worldwide.
Out of Evanston, 10 years old.
Yeah, 10 years old, right out of Evanston. We make everything right down a little alley right there in kind of the southeast corner of Evanston. If you know Evanston, we're kind of right over by that newsstand, right by the Main Street L line.
How is it that you were able to get that much distribution in 10 years?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of hard work and luck. But really, I give all the credit to the team we have. We've got a fantastic team of distillers. Our team in our bottling rack house are fantastic. And it's a team effort. It's not just one guy. It's really everybody coming together and going the same direction.
What's your best-selling product?
Our Few Bourbon's our number one selling product. It's number two selling bourbon in the country.
Few Bourbon is the number two selling bourbon in the country.
Well, Few Bourbon is the number two craft bourbon.
You know, no kidding.
You,
yeah.
I mean, you scale down your goals.
What is? I mean, I know what craft beers are. How is that decided if you're craft or macro?
So the craft is kind of decided by a trade association called the American Craft Spirits Association that I also helped to found. And we just kind of worked to make sure that we're having everybody accurately represent themselves, as well as it gives us a place that we can all get together to work for everybody's betterment.
Who's your competition then?
I don't really believe in competition. I believe in having friends. We want to bring.
Oh, that's
people.
Good. Use that. You sound like the Tito's guy now. That's a good line.
Tito's a great guy, but no, we want to share people, and we want people to come into whiskey. We want you to come join us. If you buy somebody else's product, well, I wish you'd buy mine. But please, you know, come enjoy spirits. After that, the rest of it'll work itself out.
So you're not in Kentucky or Tennessee. Is it harder to sort of create a brand and brand awareness from Illinois?
I just think it's always different. You know, so obviously we're not in Kentucky. We make all our stuff right here in the great area of Chicagoland. And I think it makes it some things more difficult. I think other things get a lot easier. It's a lot easier to stand out when we're not in the backyard of, you know, a Maker's Mark or a Jim Beam. I think it's fantastic to be in the backyard and working with some of our good friends at a lot of other Chicago distilleries. We're good friends with, you know, pretty much everybody, and we're all in this together, working to try to make spirits acceptable and bring people into the world of craft spirits.
Talking to Paul Haletko, the owner and distiller at Few Spirits. What a great success story you guys are. I see on the shelves, you see all of those bottles, and you don't know the story behind them. I didn't realize that Few was from Evanston. Why is it called Few?
Few is just, we don't make a whole lot. But there are a lot of people that see a similarity with the woman that started Prohibition. Her name was Frances Elizabeth Willard. So a lot of people see that similarity, but it's a total coincidence,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, sure it is. So Whiskey Advocate, Craft Whiskey of the Year. I want to read the description of your American Straight Whiskey. Approachable entry with graham cracker, honey on top, and a savory rye spice below. Some tart cherry in the middle. A wisp of smoke rounds out the texture. Subtle white pepper and honey finish. Who writes this stuff?
I'm not sure who wrote that
one. You didn't write that?
I did not write that.
Would you have said that? Do you, you know, I read this stuff and I go, oh, I guess I'm not smart enough to find the white pepper in here. Is that an accurate description of your straight rye?
I'd say it's pretty accurate.
I would, if I worked at it, I'd pick those out, huh?
Yeah, just when you drink your whiskeys, just sit and think about the flavors. What are you getting? What have you tasted like it before? And I always think that that tart cherry note they talked about is kind of the hallmark of our house style.
Oh, really? So if I said, what's it that distinguishes your brand, at least in the rye, it would be that, huh?
Yeah, I think all of our products have that tart cherry flavor, primarily because I like tart cherries.
Well, what with you being the owner and all, I guess that's, I mean, do you do that? How do you create and determine the optimal flavor of a bourbon or a whiskey?
I don't think there is such a thing as an optimal flavor.
But you had to make a decision. So yeah. Is it your palate? Is it your nose?
We, based on what I like. That's the benefit and the curse of being the owner, is that what you say goes, for better or for worse.
So if you don't like it, punch you in the nose, right? Yeah. You'd be the guy.
Yeah, I'd prefer you didn't punch me in the nose, but if that's how it goes down, it's how it goes down.
Well, you wanted people to come together. So then do you come up with different batches and go, how about we try something different, and now I like this better than that?
Yeah, we're always innovating and creating new stuff. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
But what you sell is already a distinct flavor, right?
Yes.
So are different years then different, or it's always going to be the same?
I think every batch tends to be a little bit different, but we certainly strive for a large degree of consistency.
You know what you ought to do is a maple bacon flavored one.
We're releasing a maple flavored bourbon in California next week.
Is it going to come to Illinois?
It will not come to Illinois, unfortunately.
Why not?
It was a very, very small batch.
You should make some more.
Yeah, we are. There's more in barrel.
Really? So here, I know you need all of this advice, but it just seems like that's kind of an expanding. It seems like a lot of the makers are coming out with a mapley tinted bourbon.
Yeah, maple flavored whiskey is always a fantastic beverage. And so it's always just a question of trying to balance what we're going to do artistically as well as commercially.
Yeah. Was the pandemic difficult for you, or as a spirits dealer, maybe it was good for you? What happened in 2020?
Well, I mean, I think pandemic was difficult for literally everybody on the planet, and certainly we were no different. Business-wise, we did fine. We held our own. Obviously, people were consuming some beverage alcohol at home, especially relatively early in pandemic. So business-wise, yeah, we did great. But I would not say that we were unscathed or unharmed. Pandemic was challenging for everyone.
Yeah, you don't want to celebrate it, but yeah. It would seem to me like if you're selling beer, wine, or whiskey, that you were sort of insulated economically from what 2020 wrought. And I know some people actually transitioned to or supplemented their spirits sales with alcohol-based products or alcohol itself, that is rubbing alcohol, or, you know, alcohol for your hands, sanitizer. Yeah. Did you guys do something like that?
We did a little bit. We primarily worked with another Chicago company that focuses on making cleaning products. I'm not an expert in cleaning products, and so we worked with people who are. That said, we have a supply of ethanol, which is one of the ingredients, and so working with people at Meliora Home Products was a fantastic opportunity for us to try to give back a little bit to our community in the hours of need. We never sold it. We donated all of it to a local hospital, as well as to our local first responders at the Evanston Police Department and Evanston Fire.
You told me off the air you don't have 10 employees here in Chicago?
Yeah, we got 8 people working at Few.
I'm surprised. I would think you would have 74 or 213 or something.
Yeah, we're growing. Yeah, you know, we're continuing to grow. We work inside of a larger company that's got about 120, 130 people with sales, marketing, finance, operations. You know, we're kind of lucky that we're able to have some real professionals help us out at this
point. How hard is it to get the right shelf space, get the right spot at Binny's?
Getting that right spot at Binny's and every retail around the country and around the world is a daily battle, because every company wants that spot, and everybody's got their people going in there taking that spot, and everybody's out there for themselves because that's how the world works. So it's a daily battle.
Does the shape of the bottle or the design of the label matter much?
I think that marketing and the way that looks is a huge deal. And all of our iconography and our bottles are meant to evoke the 1893 World's Fair right here in Chicago. It's our way of saying Chicago without using the C word. And it really kind of, people here in Chicago get it, like, oh, yeah, that's the Statue of the Republic. Oh, that's the water fountain down at the World's Fair. Oh, I get that. That's Chicago, man. I get it.
So I'm looking at the bourbon, the straight bourbon, and that's the World's Fair. That's the Great White Building
right there.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, I don't see, but it's Chicago's beer but or whiskey, but maybe you don't want that because you're in California and Kalamazoo and other places.
Yeah, well, we think, and Kalamazoo's actually my hometown. But no, we think people here in Chicago get it, and we don't need to shout things. I'm a subtle guy. I'm not going to tell you everything. You can discover it yourself.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. Wow, I need more time than I wanted to here, but apparently I'm very interested in bourbon and gin and whiskey. And they're right out of Evanston, Few Spirits. Well, it's nice to meet you. Paul Haletko, the owner and distiller, FewSpirits.com. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Continued success in Evanston. Steve Grzanich has more business news on the Business Lunch.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The suburban company known for its ear-piercing service has filed paperwork to go public. Claire's Holdings LLC says its initial public offering will be $100 million. The company has more than 1,500 stores in North America, more than 800 in Europe. It also operates in thousands of concessions around the world with 25 retail partners. Elliott International, Monarch Alternative Capital, Goldman Sachs, and JP Morgan Chase are listed as its major shareholders. Walgreens Boots Alliance may be about to acquire Evolent Health. Shares of Evolent rose as much as 18% on the news. Bloomberg reports there have been discussions with the Virginia-based company. Evolent runs a platform that helps providers like hospitals and doctors manage costs. The platform also helps them transition to a value-based care model where doctors and hospitals are reimbursed for the quality of care they provide, not the amount. The acquisition would give Walgreens exposure to a technology-enabled platform and relationships with commercial insurance and governmental sectors. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Let's check the business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Lunchtime, and if your belly isn't full of donuts, like some of us are, it's telling you it's time to eat. Chances are you won't have any trouble filling that need, but there are people who may.
In 2019, 2 billion people around the world did not have regular access to enough safe and nutritious food.
Jewel Brunat is the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture, and the USDA's main job is to make sure that we in the United States have enough to eat. Yeah, there's a lot of work to do.
In 2020, the prevalence of food insecurity was 10.5% of U.S. households.
And the USDA's Alicia Coleman-Jensen says that 10.5% translates to about 14 million U.S. households being, at times, uncertain of having enough or unable to acquire enough food to meet the needs of all the members of their family because they couldn't afford it. State by state, Illinois is better off than most other states, but it's still a big problem here. And that's where, if you're a gardener, you can help out. The garden harvest is in full swing, and Mr. Fizz will talk about that tomorrow. But as you are collecting your veggies out in the garden and you have more than you can use and you want to share with people in need, there's an app for that. A nonprofit called Fresh Food Connect, which connects backyard gardeners with local food rescue organizations, has started a partnership with Lakeview Pantry. And to get your extra produce to the pantry, just load an app, either iOS or Android, by going to freshfoodconnect.org. The app is easy to use. It'll guide you through the process of what kind of items you have, how much you have, and whether you want somebody to pick it up or where you can drop it off. freshfoodconnect.org. for that app. At the Chicago Board of Trade, after the USDA dropped a report today that beans and corn in storage is higher than expected, traders started to sell. Beans right now are down 31 cents at 12.52. Corn is trading down about 6.5 cents at 5.32. Wheat, though, is up about 12 cents at 5.722 a bushel. From the farm to your belly, today's National Hot Mulled Cider Day. You know, the weather isn't cold enough yet for that, but that is not a complaint. And National Chewing Gum Day, that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Amy. How are you?
Hey, John. How are you today?
Apologies for taking more time talking about whiskey a moment ago than I should have. Let's talk about the airport taxiway congestion. You're always about aviation. What's the story?
Yeah, this is a really interesting test of some software that has been, it happened in Charlotte and in Dallas-Fort Worth. And the idea behind this software was developed with the FAA and NASA, is that it will help airlines kind of better deal with all of those flights out on the tarmac waiting to take off, taxiing, sitting, all those kind of things. What this software does, it will then say, okay, now's the perfect time for this plane to push back from the gate. So it'll be minimal idling. And what this test found, that it was vastly efficient. It did help that happen. It did cut down on idling time, but it also saved thousands of gallons of jet fuel. So this is being rolled out to other airports, and O'Hare is one of them. O'Hare is going to get this. We can bring it to like all the big, you know, all the big hub airports. So all three of them in New York, JFK, LaGuardia, and Liberty, Newark, Liberty, Atlanta, O'Hare, you know, where all these big hubs are going to get this.
Sounds so logical. I'm amazed that trucking companies have this kind of software. I'm surprised we don't have that at airports.
That is exactly what I said when I saw this story. I thought, why is this just now a thing? I feel like that we could have had this for years. And interestingly, the FAA said it will take up to a decade to fully customize the software for each individual airport, since they're all shaped different. They all have kind of different flow and different needs and different kind of airlines coming in. But right away, Phoenix and Charlotte will be the first airports that will have it up online. And some industry watchers were commenting on with this was that as this software gets online and starts learning more and more about each airport, that potentially we will start to see kind of a ripple effect with other airports, especially since we're kind of focusing on hubs. So really interested to see exactly, you know, what this will bring to O'Hare. At the test in Charlotte, it saved more than 275,000 gallons of jet fuel each year. I mean, that's a significant amount, and it reduced carbon emissions by about 8 tons a day. So it's not an insignificant number. And if you add that across all the airports, that is potentially a really powerful tool.
The headline anyway on Southwest Airlines is there's a Disney World plane, huh?
Yeah, that's right. If people that are Disney people, you're going to be all over this. So to celebrate their anniversaries, Southwest and Disney have co-branded a Boeing 737-700. They're doing some giveaways with this. You can find out about that on Southwest's website. They're trying to give 50 vacation packages to people to experience Disney. But there are some pictures that were released of this aircraft. I mean, it is branded Disney from the outside to the inside. Everything in this aircraft, even like the luggage compartments up top, have some little sparkles and kind of Disney branding on it. There's a Mickey right underneath the pilot on the outside of the plane. It is quite a thing if you are a Disney fan.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.